Book in the Bible you could take with you to a desert island, what would it be? I want some responses. Starting over here. Anybody? What would be the which one?
Matthew,
okay.
I second Matthew.
Ephesians. Jeremiah. James. Job. Proverbs. Well, I don't agree with any of you. If I had only one book to bring to the desert island, I won't have any doubt in my own mind for myself, and that would be the book of Psalms. For most Christians in the past, and today I suspect, it has been the book of Psalms. The Psalms have always been at the center of Christian life and worship in all branches of Christianity, Catholic, Orthodox, and Protestant. And that was also true for ancient Israel, where the Psalms were sung by huge choirs of Levites accompanied by musical instruments. And only the Levites were allowed to sing those songs in public worship. In the Reformed church tradition, for hundreds of years, only the Psalms were sung in worship, no other hymns, because of their focus on God. The Geneva Psalter is still seen as a great source of church music. If you look in our hymn book sometime, you'll look at the bottom, it'll say, from the Geneva Psalter, from the Geneva Psalter. In my opinion, well, look at our own songbook. How many songs do we not have that are based on the Psalms? And in my opinion, many of Steve Bell's best songs are based on the Psalms. In fact, we sang one this morning. Why do the Psalms resonate so deeply with us? I believe it's because they speak to our hearts, our souls, our inner being, and they reflect the full range of human emotion. Everything from joy to sorrow, from despair to hope, from praise to God, to even anger with God. And the imagery that's used to share these emotions and feelings and thoughts is very magnificent. Our psalm today, Psalm 40, expresses all of these feelings and much more. I'm going to focus only on the first three verses, which actually parts of which were not included in the reading. So I'm going to read the King James Version of the first three verses, because I think the language in the King James here is unsurpassed. I quote, "I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock, and established my goings. And he hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God." Notice that the psalmist, probably David, although scholars can't agree on that, begins with the personal pronoun I. He is about to describe something that happened to him. It's not just something he's heard about or a theological idea. It's from his personal experience. The author has been going through a really tough time. He doesn't say exactly what. It could have been a personal tragedy or a deep spiritual crisis or whatever. It's also clear from these verses that he has been waiting a long time for deliverance, but it didn't come. At least not right away. Verse 1 says that he's been waiting patiently. But then at the end of the verse it says, he's been crying to the Lord. I wondered when I pondered this, is it possible to cry to the Lord and do it a long time and yet do it patiently? I don't do that easily. I imagine it's a challenge for all of us. But, verse 2, the relief has finally come. The Lord has inclined unto him. I love that old English word, and I checked its etymology. It can mean a number of things, but it means that the Lord has, in effect, as one commentator put it, tilted his head towards David in David's direction so that he can now hear his cries for help. He has inclined his head unto the Lord, unto David. The Lord's response is then conveyed through one of the most powerful metaphors I think you'll find anywhere in the Bible. The psalmist has said that he has been confined to a deep pit, a cistern in which there is almost no light, and he has been sinking deeper and deeper into the mud while surrounded by the continuous roar of running water. That's what the word means. A horrible pit. A pit in which there has been continuous running water. In other words, a place of total helplessness, total despair, and seemingly with no way of getting out. Except there is a way. The Lord has reached down and lifted him up and placed him on a secure rock. We're reminded of another biblical story. Remember the story of Jeremiah. Jeremiah had been dumped into a muddy well because he had criticized King Zedekiah. And Jeremiah undoubtedly would have died there, except he was saved through the intervention of a compassionate servant of the king, who, by the way, came from the country of Sudan, a foreigner. The instrument of the Lord was a foreigner. So that's a story which picks up on this theme clearly from Psalm 40. But getting back to Psalm 40, we note that God's actions on the psalmist's behalf are not yet over. Yes, he has been lifted up from the miry clay and had his feet put on a rock. But God has also put a new song in David's mouth, a song of praise and gratitude. Is that not often been our experience, that in moments of deliverance, we have broken and felt like breaking into song? Or if we're a composer, to write a new song. And I know, Paul, you write a lot of songs. Perhaps they're in response to experiences in your life. I was checking online. I'm learning, you know, more and more how to use online sources. And by the way, there's lots of biblical resources online now. And I was looking under Psalm 40, and lo and behold, up came the U2 version of Psalm 40, which really has captured the feeling of this song very well. And if I had been astute enough to bring the technology here, I would have played it for you. It begins, "I will sing, sing a new song. I will sing, sing a new song." Can you identify with the psalmist's experience? Can you identify with the whole experience? I suspect that all of us have spent time in the horrible pit, where everything seems dark and hopeless. Some of you may be going through that right now. I hope that you will also be able to identify with the next, with the words also of the song, but also with the sentiment that U2 expresses later on, which really caught my attention. It captured the emotion, I think, of the song. How long to sing a new song? How long to sing a new song? And I interpreted that to mean, how long will it be till we can sing that new song? How long will it be until we can experience the hope and deliverance? We might be saying, we need it now. And yet, we have to wait. What do we know about the biblical teaching on this? Well, we know that the Lord hears our cry and always responds, but the response may not be in the form that we want, and it may even not be in the way that we can immediately recognize. I'll repeat that. It may not be in the form that we want or like, and it may not come in a form which we can immediately recognize. It will take time for us to recognize the response of God. In fact, the Lord's response might be, to wait. Because he knows that we are in a situation where we have yet much learning to do. That there are valuable things that can only be learned while we are spending time in the pit. As hard as it is, and as very hard as it is. We also know from biblical teaching that we are always in a state of grace. We will always be given enough strength for the moment, not the next moment, not the future moments, but the moment right now. We also know that we have many companions on this journey. Companions who have also experienced the pit. Those companions can now help us and work with the Lord to help lift us up out of that pit. To me, at least, as I meditated on Psalm 40, I found it very encouraging. Encouraging not because the response is easy, but because I identified totally, at least with those first three verses, which is what I was focusing on today. There have been times for me that I've also been in the miry pit. And yet I'm glad to say that in each case, the Lord saw me through. Let's ponder the message of Psalm 40. Let us meditate on it. Thanks be to God.